It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferry. We often get advice to start saving money and investing early in our lives, but we don't always get advice on how to actually do that. Not all of us have people in our lives who are familiar with the lingo and the ins and outs of how to do it, or we just feel uncomfortable taking risks on things that we don't know a lot about. Our next guest is going to provide a little framework on how to get started investing on your own. We want to hear what you think. Do you have questions about getting started with your investing? Do you have advice you would want to share with others? You can post that on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Emily Guy Birkin is a personal finance blogger from Wauwatosa and author of several books, including the forthcoming book, Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. Emily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you write that you had an experience as a kid in class about the value of investing early. And before we get into how to invest, can you remind us of that lesson? How much does it pay off to invest earlier and save earlier rather than later?
Yes. When I was in ninth grade, my social studies teacher had a specific class where we learned about the power of compound interest. And he gave the example of, and it, just by coincidence, he happened to choose me as the early investor. And then a classmate of mine named Joe was the late investor, and saying that if I invested $150 per month starting at age 18 and continuing on till age 40 and then stopped, and then Joe put aside $1,000 per month starting at age 40 and then continued on until he wanted to retire at age 65, assuming a 10% annual return, I would end with almost $1.4 million, even though I only set money aside for 22 years and was only putting $150 a month away, whereas Joe was going to retire at 65 with almost $1.2 million, even though he set aside more for a longer period of time, because that's the power of compound interest. And that stuck with me in part, I'm sure, because I was the example student that Mr. Bosley chose. But also it was just kind of cool. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool math. The problem was, even though my father was a financial planner, and I've always been a money nerd and I've been interested in this, it was one of those where like, okay, that's cool, but how do I get there? How do I do that? You know, right. Like I want to do that, but how?
Right. I dimly recall at age 18, even if I happen to have an extra 100 or 150 bucks lying around and I did want to invest it, I wouldn't have had a clue as to how to do it. So what kind of things are you looking at when it comes to introducing kids to the practicalities of how to actually invest money?
So for me, what I want the kids to understand is that they have some of the information and knowledge that anyone might need to invest. So Warren Buffett very famously says, don't invest in anything you don't understand. And kind of the opposite of it is make sure to invest in things you understand well. So, for instance, my husband is an automotive engineer. He currently works for Harley Davidson. And he has been working with internal combustion engines for his entire career and has been, you know, fascinated by them as a teenager. You know, he is in some ways self-taught, you know, was working on cars as a teenager. So he has a very deep understanding of the automotive industry. And so he can understand how when there's news about regulations, when there's news about a new innovation, how that might affect things like sales, how that might affect the industry as a whole. So he has this very important knowledge that most people don't have that will give him kind of a leg up when it comes to thinking about investing in publicly traded companies. So when it comes to kids, I want them to know you have knowledge too. You know, if you have ever been around a kid who has like very condescendingly explained, no, that's not, that's Charizard. That is not... Jigglypuff, whichever. I do not understand Pokemon. That they have a very deep understanding of things that are important to them. And those things are represented by publicly traded companies. So one of the things that I did with my kids was one day we just for fun, we sat down and we took a dry erase board and we wrote down, like, what are all of your favorite things in the world? what are they? And so they named all kinds of interesting stuff, from like ice cream and pizza to things like Pokemon and Batman and Ninja Turtles, Mickey Mouse, the Muppets, swimming. So that was just one day. Then we waited until the next week because we didn't want to overwhelm them, and said, okay, pick two each of these and we'll figure out if there is a publicly traded company that this represents. So my elder son picked Pokemon and a show called Pup Academy, which is on the Disney Channel. And my younger son picked toys and Batman. And so we did a little bit of research, you know, who owns Batman, who owns the DC Comics. At the time, it was AT&T, which has since been purchased by Discovery. My older son, Pokemon, he discovered was owned by Nintendo. And then Pup Academy is owned by Disney. In terms of toys, we looked into Mattel toys. And so with that, we're like, you know a little bit about these things because this is the stuff that you consume. So we are going to buy a share of each of these. So my husband and I are bankrolling it for the kids, but we're going to buy a share of each of these, and we're just going to see what it does. We're going to see what it does, and we're going to think about anything that we might know about these things and how that might affect things. So, for instance, when before AT&T sold DC to Discovery, my older son was in the car with me, and he heard a radio commercial for AT&T phone service, and he got a little offended. He's like, hey, they're trying to raise their stock price. because he was thinking about his brother's investments, and I, you know, tried to explain, well, there's a lot that AT&T does. This is part of what's going on, and you know, do you think this will affect their stock price because this is part of how AT&T works and operates? And so, having that conversation with him was kind of giving him that gentle introduction to what it means to be invested in a company, what a company does, what the kinds of things that a company spends money on, and how that might affect both customers and investors. And so this is the sort of thing where we feel confident about teaching our kids things like how to cook, about teaching our kids how to work on a car, you know, the things that we know something about, and we feel less confident about things like investing. But if we start looking at it as, what's something I know a lot about? What can I, you know, if I buy a single share of that, what can I do with that and see where it goes? And how can we incorporate what I know about this company, what I know about this product into our conversations? That takes down the intimidation level, and it definitely kind of invites the kids to be thinking about things not just as a consumer but also as an investor.
Talking to Emily Guy Birkin, personal finance blogger based in Wauwatosa, author of a number of books, including the forthcoming Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. Talking about investing, talking about educating kids about money and investing. You can join in with your questions or maybe what you've done with your kids at 800-642-1234. And Emily, when I was 18, I don't know if you could buy a single share of something. I think I would have had to go to a stockbroker and probably pay a fee. It probably wouldn't have been worth it, I guess. I don't know about when you were 18. There are some tools now that allow people to do that, maybe for better or worse. What's out there?
So, yeah, the world has become much more democratized, particularly the world of investing. And so you have apps like things like Robinhood, which I am kind of ambivalent about that app for a number of reasons, because it is more democratized. And so you get to see things like a lot of little guys banding together on something like Robinhood, like they did with the GameStop stock back in the spring of this year, which was amazing to see because it was the power of that kind of democratization versus, you know, hedge funds who are, you know, the big dogs. The problem is, since it's an app, it feels like a game, and a lot of things are gamified. And so it's one of those things where I like to tell people, think of Robinhood like an app or a game with in-app purchases, so that you think real hard before you spend any money in it. But it can be an excellent learning tool if you remember what it is that you're doing with it. And so that's what we're using with our kids, because again, you can buy just a single share of something using something like Robinhood very easily. So it's this double-edged sword of, you do have this easier entree into the world of investing, but that also means you have an easier entree into the world of investing. So as ever, tread lightly.
And I've also heard, Emily, when kids start making money for through their first job or babysitting or whatever, they can do things a little more diversified, like get their first Roth IRA. Is that something mm-hmm. worth bringing kids into when they're old enough to actually be making a little bit of money?
Yes, absolutely. Now, for one thing, getting kids starting to invest in their retirement is going to be huge, because even if all you do is put aside $10 every couple of months into a Roth IRA, if you're doing that with a teenager, the amount of time, you've got 50 years for that money to grow. And so that's that lesson that my social studies teacher was trying to show us when I was in ninth grade. And so that can be a huge thing. And then particularly because of Roth IRAs, the way those work is you put money in that has already been taxed. Kids are not going to be in a situation where they need to worry about high tax rates, because, you know, they're working after school jobs, they're working summer jobs. If they are going to owe any taxes whatsoever, it's not going to be a lot. So you put that money in and then it grows and you take it out tax-free in retirement. The difference between your tax bracket when you're a 17-year-old and your tax bracket when you're a 67-year-old is going to be huge. So you are going to be helping your kids out in two different ways, both with the investing and with the potential tax savings. And so that's something that a lot of people just, it doesn't occur to you. I mean, it's, you don't think about retirement when you're 15. You don't. It's hard about college savings when your child's a newborn. But doing that kind of thing early on, and even just a little bit, just saying like, hey, you know, you got paid $500 over the summer. How about $25 goes into your Roth IRA? I mean, it doesn't sound like much, but let it sit for all that time. It's going to make a big difference.
We're talking to Emily Guy-Burkin, personal finance blogger from Wauwatosa, author of Personal Finance Books. Talk about how to get started with investing and how to introduce concepts of investing and money management to kids. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. If you already invest, how did you get started? Have you worked with kids on lessons about money, especially on investing? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. The conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Emily Guy-Burkin about investing for beginners, especially introducing kids to concepts related to investing. Emily's a personal finance blogger from Wauwatosa, author of a bunch of personal finance books, including an upcoming one called Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Steve is with us in La Crosse. Steve, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for doing this, Emily. I appreciate it. This really falls into a perfect question that I had. So I have a son that's 11, and mm-hmm. probably since he was like 8 or 9, we've talked about investing and compounding interest, and he's like super interested in it. He works really hard. I told him once he saves $1,000, which is taking him a while to get there, but that's like all of his birthday money, the money that he earns in the summer, that we would invest it. I've sadly have not been able to find sort of a program that he can invest it into, that he can log in and watch it grow. You know what I mean? Something that's really geared towards kids, something that would like really get them interested in it and excited for it. I know we've talked about doing a Roth IRA, but that seems really plain, probably the best way to go. Mm-hmm. But is there any investment company that has something like this that kids can get involved with it, because that would really, I think, would spur their interest on wanting to put more money into it, and then in turn, hopefully make them a miser of money.
Interesting, Steve. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing that that question. Emily, what do you think?
That is an excellent question, and I'm afraid I don't know anything off of the top of my head that is specifically geared towards kids. I do know that there are, you know, a number of banks and other things will have things like savings accounts for kids and trying to teach them in that way. And the other option that I have seen, there are some places where you can get like beautiful stock certificates of certain companies. So like I know Disney for one, that are frameable, and that's another thing that sometimes people will do as a gift for a child. Like, you know, I bought you a stock in Disney, and there's, you know, the regular stock, but then there's this beautiful frameable stock certificate that's got the, you know, the swoopy D and all of that. So I think one of the things that we as parents can do is find ways to make it exciting for them, even if there isn't necessarily an app specifically for it. And, you know, there very well may be but, you know, as I mentioned with Robinhood, sometimes apps can be a double-edged sword. But something that we are doing with our kids is we have a weekly meeting every week where we kind of just talk about, here's what we're planning for the next week, so the kids will know, you know, when their swim lesson is, you know, if there's a dentist appointment coming up, that sort of thing. And we've incorporated the investing into our weekly meeting, where we just kind of look, see how things are doing, and we keep a notebook where we write it down. We're hoping to eventually, we just have not gotten around to it, to have a like a board where we can track things in the same way that when my husband and I were first married, we got very excited about paying off debt because we had a debt thermometer up in our kitchen and we couldn't wait to color it in. Kids are the same way. I mean, that's so giving them something that, even if it's not necessarily in an app with the lights and colors and all of that, you can find a way to make it really exciting with like, hey, this is what I'm invested in. It's on my wall. Either, you know, you've got that stock certificate, or you've got the chart that you're building together with each time you check in on how your investments are doing. And then that kind of DIY method of doing it could be a really nice way to work together and get excited about it together.
Thanks for that call, Steve. We'll go now to Jackie with us in Milwaukee. Jackie, hello.
Hi. You mentioned about investing in something you're knowledgeable and interested in and you keep up with, but yet I wouldn't know what to do with it. I've always been kind of under the thing that with investments, you buy and you stay in it a long time, because if I hear something, I don't want to be buying and selling every time I hear something that sounds either positive or negative.
Interesting, Jackie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, buy and hold, or play the market and respond to each news up and down tick.
That's an excellent question. And yes, absolutely. I am a big believer in buy and hold. And that's one of the things where rather than using your knowledge to try to time the market in terms of selling it, like, oh, it's going gangbusters now, but something bad's coming down the line, let's sell it now. It's more along the lines of, you know, if you have an idea of something exciting coming down the line, that's when to buy. That's the only way that I think is helpful to time the market, is if you like, oh, I know there's this new technology coming that's going to change this. Or, you know, one of the things I remember very vividly when Jurassic Park came out in the 1990s, we knew it was coming. And my dad said something about, like, now would be the time to invest in anything dinosaur related. and so with what I'm trying to do with my children and kind of the point of why I want them to invest in something they know is that they can understand how the stock market works, understand what it means to be invested, and understand what the relationship between what happens in the world, what happens with consumers, what happens with news, what happens with new innovations, and how that affects investors. So it's not necessarily teaching them how to time the market, because that's a worthy goal. Timing the market is another form of gambling, in my opinion. But it's really more about the being able to look at the patterns and see, hey, this is how this happened. This is what happened to our money when that happened. And so they will feel more confident and comfortable with the market and feel like this is something they can do.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last minute or so, Emily, I know some young investors are interested in the new cryptocurrencies, the blank coins out there. When it comes to that idea of investing in things you understand, what do you think of that?
Cryptocurrency worries me specifically for that reason, just because a lot of the people who invest in it don't necessarily understand it. And it's in the same way that the dot-com bubble in the late 90s, people were like, computers, they're great, without really understanding computers. So when it comes to things like crypto, when it comes to any like the best new thing down the block and you can't lose, and like there are these people who started with $100 and now they're millionaires, it's always important to go, what am I reacting to? Am I reacting to this because I think it's a good idea, that I like the idea of you know, this blockchain, something that is not related to government, that is completely free of regulation? Am I reacting to what it actually is, or am I reacting to the stories about it, about someone who managed to do something incredible with it because they understood it? And so asking yourself that question can help you separate the, you know, exciting opportunities that you should look into and the exciting opportunities that you should just let pass by.
Emily, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
That's Emily Guy-Birkin, personal finance blogger from Wauwatosa. Her upcoming book is called Stacked, Your Super Serious Guide to Modern Money Management. She joined us to talk about investment lessons for kids. Read more of her work. We've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time. Coming up after the news, it's this week's edition of Food Friday. We'll learn how to make one meal into two. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. I like using leftovers in my cooking. I always have. It's fun to see what you have in the fridge and figure out something new you can do with it. On this week's edition of Food Friday, our guest takes it a step further and plans in advance. She cooks meals with a second recipe in mind right from the start, so we can get another completely different meal out of the parts of our cooking that take the most effort. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite kinds of leftovers? Do you like to eat them as is or make something new out of them? And do you ever cook meals thinking, this is meal A, but I'm coming in with a plan for meal B coming out of this stuff? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Cassie Joy Garcia is the creator and editor-in-chief of the food and wellness blog Fed and Fit. She's a cookbook author, most recently of Cook Once, Dinner Fix, quick and exciting ways to transform tonight's dinner into tomorrow's feast. Cassie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I love this cookbook. All the recipes come in pairs. So one common ingredient you make goes into both of them. What started you down this road of kind of thinking ahead this way?
Necessity. I'm the mother of two small children, soon to be three in just a couple of months. And I work full time. and we just have a very richly scheduled household, if you will. And for some reason, getting dinner on the table night after night, even though I love to cook and I have been a recipe developer for over a decade now, was leaving me feeling exhausted and burnout, and I needed a more efficient system.
How do you go looking for pairs of recipes? We're going to check out some of these recipes in a bit, but where do you find, like, okay, if I do this work once, most of this cooking is going to transfer over to meal B?
You know, it really started with wanting to not only make life as easy as possible and roll that effort forward, like you said so well already, but wanting to keep some variety in what we were plating on the table night after night. Food boredom, especially through the pandemic, was something that we were really bumping up against, getting tired of the same dishes over and over again. And so wanting to mix in different varieties. And so what I found myself doing was, for example, cooking up a beautiful brisket for one night, serving it up with some pretty classic sides, maybe a slaw and maybe a polenta, for example, but then finding myself craving Mongolian beef, you know, a Chinese inspired dish, and using that brisket to help that come to life, but in a really quick way. And so it was more along the lines of what would be really exciting, what would be an exciting meal to have either the next day or the day after that.
I love this because I have done the thing like, okay, I'm going to make a lot of this food so we have lots of leftovers. And then day three, I'm pretty tired of those leftovers. All right, let's get into some concrete recipes. You've shared these with us. We've got them at WPR.org/Food Friday. Our first pairing centers around chicken, roasted chicken. So let's start with the first recipe in this pairing, roasted chicken and potatoes with fresh arugula salad. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yes. So this is the... I'm a big believer in, I think we're making recipes a little too complicated. And so this recipe is such a great showcase of that because it's a roasted chicken that is so simply done, very, very simply done, but you're going to get maximum flavor and results. I wanted to make sure that this was a book that you could drop into the lap of somebody who was really a beginner in the kitchen, and they could confidently follow these steps and produce a really reliable, high quality result. So you're going to get this beautiful roasted chicken. And while the oven's on, I say, let's pop in some potatoes and roast up some potatoes along with that chicken. And then toss together a really nice, light, and simple arugula salad to go with it. If your family or if you don't like arugula, spinach would be a really great one for one swap. And that would be meal one. And we would make that chicken with in mind, I'm going to make twice as much chicken than I know what we need tonight for dinner. And then those planned for leftovers. So if that means one bird for your head, that would be one chicken in my house, but I know in many homes that would be two chickens or more. So the planned for leftovers already roasted, that gets put into the refrigerator for meal two.
And meal two, then we've got this chicken handy because we made extra and we don't need to put any more time into making the chicken. Now we've got the key ingredient for butter chicken bowls with white rice.
Yes. And oh my goodness, are you in for a treat? That dinner is so delicious. So it's this Indian inspired dish, my version of buttered chicken. And it is a really delicious, creamy, tomatoey sauce with some really lovely, bold spices, but that comes together really quickly. And so what I like to do is take that leftover chicken, planned for leftover chicken, right? Chop it up, sear it in some either ghee or butter or olive oil, whatever you've got within reach. And then we just create the sauce really quickly in the same skillet and then serve this yummy curry style sauce over a fluffy white rice. And only the cook in the home is going to know that this was tied so closely with that roasted chicken dinner that you had already with the potatoes and the arugula. Nobody else who might be enjoying this fabulous meal is going to be really any the wiser.
You can find both those recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. Cassie Joy Garcia is our Food Friday guest this week. We're talking about her book, Cook Once, Dinner Fix, Quick and Exciting Ways to Transform Tonight's Dinner into Tomorrow's Feast. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you cook meals with leftovers in mind, either with a plan to eat exactly that same meal again and again, or to know you're going to use the outcome of this dinner to make something completely different tomorrow? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Cassie, I do the grocery shopping for my household in addition to a lot of the cooking. This seems like a fun way. This would be fun to shop for, right? I know this is the centerpiece. This is the common trait of these two meals. And then I'm just like building both of them out of that. Is this kind of fun at the store?
I think it's fun. You know, if you're somebody who enjoys efficiencies, you're going to get a kick out of it.
Because, and I am.
Yes, exactly. You know, if it's the way that I structured the book is it's not broken up. It's not really your typical recipe book. It's not broken up by appetizers, sides, and desserts, and so on. The book is broken up into 5 chapters that feature the main component. And so there's a poultry chapter, pork, beef, seafood, and vegetarian. And my hope is that when you go through the grocery store, let's say if you find your favorite ground beef is on sale, then you would know, oh gosh, I'm going to go find a dinner series that calls for ground beef, because a ground beef dinner series is going to have you brown up, crumble 3 pounds of ground beef at once, and then split it between 2 wonderful meals. And so it makes it really fun to shop and really shop efficiently.
Another thing I love about how you're talking about your meals and how you write about them in the book is the flexibility. Like earlier you mentioned, use ghee or butter or olive oil. You know, they might taste a little different. It's all going to come out fine. You give suggestions like that. Also, like, hey, you want this gluten-free? In some cases, here's how. You want this veggie? Do this instead of this. And I think that's a great attitude toward cooking. Why is that important to you?
You know, I want my recipes to be as approachable and inclusive as possible. And none of them are really precious to me. I'm a pretty terrible recipe follower myself. Yeah. And I find myself saying, oh, that sounds good, but I'm going to try it with this. You know, and I think there's a lot of fun and creativity that can come out of the kitchen when you approach it with that kind of anything's possible attitude. And it can just be a really fun activity, I think, if you if you just want to be a little bit more creative. And also, if that makes you nervous and you'd prefer to follow the recipe to the letter, I've got you covered.
Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. John is with us in Freedom. John, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your recipe combo, John?
I will start with a tongue taco, so I'll try to follow a traditional Mexican recipe. Herbs, garlic, bay leaves, spices, simmer that for 3 hours. After rinsing my scotch and whiskey bottles, a little bouillon. I then strain off that broth, and I will make beef barley soup, pot roast. Any leftover wine that we don't want will go in the pot roast. You can save broth anytime you want.
Awesome. I love it, John. I like the crossover. So the broth from cooking the meat part of his meal ends up being a soup. I kind of go the other way. I'll make extra of, say, the chicken or whatever, knowing that, you know, over the weekend, I'm going to put that into a big soup. What do you think? What do you think, Cassie?
I think that's brilliant. My goodness. That sounds great.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, John, at 800-642-1234. We heard from Darlene on Facebook, who said the whole reason for cooking is to have leftovers. I love it. How are you, Cassie, at sort of the scrounge, like I do a lot? You know, oh, I've got this in the fridge, I'm going to build a meal around that. You're thinking ahead, but I imagine you still do some improvising.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of improvising within bounds. You know, I found that if I really want to use up, I really love being able to use up all the vegetables. And I'm not going to say that I've got a perfect record or anywhere close to that, but some of our scrounge meals, if you will, is I will, if a recipe calls for half of an onion, or, you know, 3 carrots, or just not all the mushrooms that I have on hand, all of those extras of those vegetables go into what my veggie bowl in the refrigerator. It sits out right in the front. And then every week I do a red sauce for my girls. They love it with spaghetti. And I toss all those extra vegetables in there. And it becomes a really quick and easy way to scrounge for those leftover ingredients, the things that you've just got on hand. And it's a bit of a mystery, but you get to up the veggie content in that sauce.
That sounds awesome. We're talking to Cassie Joy Garcia on this week's edition of Food Friday, talking about cooking meals with a plan for leftovers. She's the author of the book Cook Once, Dinner Fix, quick and exciting ways to transform tonight's dinner into tomorrow's feast. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like doing creative things with leftovers from last night's meal, or do you cook tonight's meal knowing you're going to use all or part of it in something similar or maybe something completely different? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up, a cauliflower combo. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
timely news, fascinating conversations, stimulating music, or laugh-out-loud entertainment. There's something for everyone on WPR. Individuals and families who donate are the largest source of support for the programs you enjoy. Thank you, members. You make it all possible.
Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Join us for Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Certain parts of his brain light up when he does that.
Beta is a polyphonic mosh pit where high culture and low culture collide.
Coming out of the gate.
We take an immersive, innovative, playful, and provocative approach to exploring arts, culture, and technology. Saturday morning at 11 on the Ideas Network.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with professional home cook Cassie Joy Garcia. Her new cookbook is Cook Once, Dinner Fix, quick and exciting ways to transform tonight's dinner into tomorrow's feast. Lots of pairs of recipes so you can use your labor twice. That roasted chicken goes into two completely different dishes, for example. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Cassie, before we go back to our callers, we got some chicken recipes earlier. You also shared some cauliflower recipes, starting with General Tso's cauliflower. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, this is right out of the vegetarian chapter, and I love this dinner series. So we start off with, essentially, we want you to grab 3 to 4 heads, depending on how large they are, of cauliflower. Go ahead and cut off the florets, and we're going to roast them very simply with some olive oil, salt, and pepper. And then once they come out and they're nicely cooked, we're going to toss it around in a sticky, somewhat sweet, a little spicy General Tso's style sauce. And it creates this really delicious dish. And I serve that over fluffy white rice for meal number one.
And then meal number two, we got all this cauliflower lying around. Cauliflower tinga tacos.
Oh, gosh, that is a really tasty dish. And I'm so excited for folks to try it. So cauliflower tinga tacos, it is a Mexican style flavor profile. And it's a tomato-y sauce that has some chipotle in there. There's some good heat, some lime juice, and we create this really delicious rub. Toss the cauliflower in that and re-crisp it. And so that really brings the cauliflower, even though it's already cooked and maybe you're on, it's day three, right, of the cauliflower being cooked, brings it back to life and gives it new life, if you will, with this brand new sauce. Toast up some, I prefer some corn tortillas over a flame on the stove, and get those nice and bristled or blistered, and then serve the tinga filling in there with some avocado and lime juice. It's delicious.
Sounds fantastic. You can find that recipe at WPR, both those recipes at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Susan is with us in Green Bay. Susan, hi.
Hi. I just enjoy listening to this show, and I just wanted to make one comment. I am going to purchase this cookbook for my daughter. She's a 20-something, lives alone, not, you know, the most seasoned cook. But when you're cooking and for one person, there's often so many leftovers. And I think this is a great idea for a single person and what to do with the leftovers. Love the creative ideas, and I also love that there's a gluten-free and a vegetarian option as well. So I'm going to purchase this for my daughter for Christmas.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas to her. Susan, thanks for calling. Cassie, do you have thoughts on tailoring your combo recipes for cooking for one?
I do. Yes, actually. And I have actually a consideration in the front of that book. That's a question I get a lot in a lot of my recipe development projects is, how do we scale this either for one or many, many more people? And so I have a bit of a compass in there for folks, but I say, you know, these recipes are written intentionally so that the math is going to be really easy, whether you're cutting it in half or doubling or tripling. So hopefully she feels very well supported with it.
Thanks a lot for the call, Susan. We're talking to Cassie Joy Garcia. Her new book is Cook Once, Dinner Fix, quick and exciting ways to transform tonight's dinner into tomorrow's feast. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Steve is with us now in Wausau. Hey, Steve.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm an avid believer of what we're talking about right now and do it all the time personally, but what I'm calling about is professionally. I've got 30 years of experience working with the nonprofit human sector, and for a while I drove a truck which would deliver food to a soup kitchen. And the cool thing was that there was one restaurant who gave us what we called what's in the refrigerator soup. And they would just put it together. And sometimes it had, you know, just all edible stuff, all good stuff. But it was their way of making a contribution to the soup kitchen. So this is my call out to restaurants and professionals to say, hey, how can you repurpose? And encouraging, you know, upscaling and serving more people with leftovers. It's a great idea.
Oh, interesting, Steve. That is how I make soup at home, too. What's in the fridge soup. That's an interesting idea, Cassie. The pros at the restaurants can do something like this. In this case, they did for a soup kitchen.
I love it. That's brilliant.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Steve. It's soup season here in Wisconsin, Cassie, or it's starting to be. I love making soup. What are some of your favorite ways to take leftovers out of the fridge or previous meals and soupify them?
Oh, my goodness. There are unlimited possibilities. I actually just made 3 big soups yesterday.
Wow.
And chicken, of course, is usually one that we're grabbing pretty often. But shredded chicken, I will make anytime I'm making shredded chicken, let's say for a casserole or something like that, I will usually double the amount of protein that I'm making and then store that shredded chicken in the refrigerator if I know I'm going to use it right away or in the freezer. And then yesterday, for example, I pulled together this lemon turmeric ginger soup with chicken and sweet potato and then tossed them some kale. And it was just really lovely and wonderful, but it came together so quickly. It was the most work involved was chopping up the sweet potato.
If you're making 3 soups at once, I'm going to go on a limb, Cassie, and guess that you're freezing some of those.
It's the postpartum baby prep.
No, but that's great. So what, and you actually talk a little bit about what can you freeze? What can you assume is going to change or not in the freezer? What are your thoughts for that convenient meal prep on the sorts of things that we can make with freezing in mind?
Yes. You know, there's a lot I think that might actually be the beefiest part of that front part of the book is my freezer guide, because it is also definitely a frequently asked question. There's so much. If you've got the space available in your freezer, if you have a freezer and it's just not well organized, it might be really great motivation to get in there and tidy it up a bit, because there's so much that you can do to organize your freezer, to set yourself up for success, to do future you some favors. And so I walk you through freezing either fresh components, so fresh ingredients, fresh vegetables, shopping while things are in season, and also freezing cooked components and how you might move through that. And then when it comes to reheating, which is a frequently asked question, what's the best way to reheat this dish or this kind of dish? What I usually like to tell folks is I think that the best place to reheat something is where you would have cooked it the first time. So if it's a casserole, for example, then I like to reheat it in the oven where I would have baked that casserole to begin with. Or if it was a soup or a chili, that would go on the stovetop in a pot.
Before we wrap up, Cassie, I remember when my twins were infants and I got really good at making things that you could prep during nap time. And then you could leave them in the oven or whatever when the kids got back up and they'd cook in time for dinner. Do you have any advice for fitting in that meal prep during a short nap time?
Oh, my goodness, do I. That's how I move through the day. So I say do the thing while you have the time to do it.
Yeah.
And even if it is as simple as pulling out your rice and leaving it in a measuring cup or in the pot on the stove without water, but the water measured next to it. So as you've got it out, because for me, I'm carrying around an 18-month-old on one hip with a big old baby belly. And it's just the possibility of doing more things with one hand or fewer in the hours to come. So do as much as you can, get as much out, your mise en place, if you will, during that nap time.
And Cassie, what's for dinners this weekend?
Oh gosh, dinner this weekend. We're going to have carnitas. We're diving into the pork chapter. It's a most loved dinner series. We're going to have those crispy, perfect carnitas cooked down a pork shoulder. And then meal 2 is the sticky honey garlic pork Asian style dish that my family just loves.
And when can I show up?
Anytime. You're welcome. Anytime.
Cassie, thanks a lot for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me.
That's Cassie Joy Garcia, creator and editor-in-chief of the food and wellness blog Fed and Fit. She's also a cookbook author. Most recently, the book we've been talking about, Cook Once, Dinner Fix, quick and exciting ways to transform tonight's dinner into tomorrow's feast. We have a couple pairs of recipes up at WPR.org/Food Friday, one based on chicken, one based on cauliflower. Make them. this weekend. Make them both and let us know how it all turned out. Coming up, a lot of us have a few favorite movies we can list, but what actually makes them great? A Wisconsin film scholar helps us learn how to watch movies like an expert. From the quiet dramas to the action blockbusters, we'll find out what we can watch for to appreciate the movies even more. That's coming up next here on Central Time. We'll hear about movies coming up, and here's an opportunity for movie lovers, a chance to watch 25 holiday films over the next month and get paid for it. The website reviews.org is looking for applicants for the job of Chief Holiday Cheermeister. The deal, you watch 25 holiday movies over the month of December and write a review of each of them. In return, you get $2,500 and a year subscription to 7 different movie streaming services. You get to pick your holiday film list. They have some suggestions, including Home Alone, Elf, and A Muppet Christmas Carol, but not Die Hard, interestingly. Now, call me Ebenezer Scrooge McDuck, but you could look at this as a publicity stunt and a way to build their email contact lists. But hey, if you love Christmas movies, you're going to watch them anyway. Maybe it's worth a shot. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.